Hello and welcome. This is Corey Angelot. Welcome to the End of Slavery Summit. I'm here with Fred Gringris of the LiberCast, and we're going to be talking about shadow work. And I'm also here with my host, Aaron Butler. We're going to go deep into what it means to have shadow work, first things first. Well, what is shadow work? Could you introduce some about yourself as well, Fred?
Okay, so it began at my spiritual crisis, actually. I found out about David Icke and Mark Passio and Michael Tesarian. And Michael Tesarian has been a pivot in my life from the aspect of psychic vampirism and behaviorism and psychology and things like that. It opens a door inside. When you take in a certain knowledge about psychology, you start with yourself. And this is how the shadow work for me began. More of an intellectual aspect first, and then spiritual shadow working as came after that. I have a past I've been abused in certain way, like a lot of people. By the way, there's a lot of people who don't know what abuse is, and they don't know that they've been abused. But in the way, I decided to stop to lying to myself first. I decided to confront the shadows and my demons, like people called it. So the work is ongoing. It's still ongoing, and I'm still struggling through the purification. You call it transmutation or psychological change. And it is a step-by-step progress. Sorry for my French. After 10 years of deep introspection, there's a lot of positive aspect that come from it. And this is what I wanted to bring up in my podcast, more of a healing and experiencing the shadow work. Mostly because there is no great work without shadow work. It doesn't exist.
It's really important that people look at shadow work, and you have personal experience, you said yourself, with the shadow work. So yes. How does that relate to slavery? Because I know you mentioned to me how this is a really core aspect to understand.
Yes. Everything is about this. You know, all the mind control, the programming from the cultural point, from the theological point. There's no separation. When you're into natural law, you understand really quickly that everything is connected together. What I mean by that is that shadow work mostly is a destructive path. Okay. It is taking truth about yourself and about the world, and then making peace with yourself. It's not about destroying peace, but it's a destructive process. What I mean, that truth is a destructive process for people who live in lies. So this is what I want to bring. Slavery, it's all in the mind of the people. Yes, you have the shackle version of it that happened and still happening today. Let's not bring down the information, because the slavery is still very active when we're talking about shackling and coercion and things like that. So basically, shadow working is a way to alleviate these shackles. Because when you're in this path, you're discovering truth about yourself, and you will probably not love this. There's a lot of repression. There's a lot of schism inside yourself, you know, because this whole society is a schism.
Yeah.
So even more in the parental aspect, is intergenerational mind control.
So, and when you said you kind of confronted abuse, kind of, you know, another word for this is trauma, right?
Yes.
You're confronting trauma. Yes. And sort of, you know, there's this self trauma as well. We talk about self loathing, right? This is another scenario. Could you fill us in on some about that and maybe how that relates to shadow work?
So self-loathing as such is a consequences of bad minding conditioning. It's like you have the if you have garbage, like Mark Passo says, if you have garbage that are told to you, then you're gonna process garbage and what comes up at the end. So even what I want to say about this is there's no shadow work without pain. Usually the people who are doing the shadow work are people who have suffered in their life enough to want to put a stop to it, basically. So you have to break these conditionings that you have inside, and self-loathing is the first one we have to attack, that we have to fight and confront, because this one is a wall in your progress. It's gonna stop you right there. And let me tell you, people, okay, and people will listen to this, this is not funny. This is not funny stuff, okay? We are not there to ascend to another dimension, okay? If you're there because you want to be in full awareness of this dimension, the 3D world and the spiritual world.
And you can't just run away from your problems.
You always have the choice, but if you're in shadow work, you're gonna, there's some things that are, that you put on the drawer, that there's this will coming back, and usually it's going full front. You feel the slap, you know.
Well, and you've mentioned a lot about parenting, and it seems like parenting, in my experience, really it forces you, or it brings up this shadow in yourself that you ignore. And you find a lot of parents that you know, they'll treat their children as if they're just some separate entity from themselves. When from my experience, it seems like you know, when your child is behaving a certain way or out of alignment with how you perceive, you know, you think that they should be acting or how you act, but the truth is that they're just mirroring the behavior and you know, the attitudes that you have given them and you have programmed them with. You know, how much have you learned in this experience about you know, seeing that reflection of yourself in them and not fighting it as much, and you know.
So what I want to bring about that, because parenting, there is a big sorry about that.
So good.
Basically
it's parenting.
Yes. Basically children are your are a mirror to you. So when you have, I've been raised a certain way, I'm not agreeing with this, and I try as much as we can as parents, because we're not perfect, we're gonna make mistakes. But if you have the self-reflection and the self-awareness, then you're not gonna be able to correct it, because it's all about actions. You can read about parenting in books and listening to videos, but when there are your children, when it's your family, it's pretty different. You know, my parents were a little cold. I've been victim from humiliation from my parents and things like that, and this stuff there will have real hard consequence on the behaviors of children. And I realized it, because this is, and we're coming full circle with self-loathing there, because children, when their parents treat them like crap, they will blame themselves for it. And most parents are not mature enough, are not experienced enough to have children. And what is happening when children are making children? Because this is I'm not joking, and I'm getting back a lot to this, but it's a good example. Mostly the IQ of people is to 6 to 7 years old. Okay, so you have adult roaming around with 6 to 7 years old IQ. I'm not saying that children are not intelligent at 6, 7 years old, but when you have 50, 60 years old, 40, you know, it's not a justification for being a asset.
Yeah. So would you say there's techniques to heal that shadow work? I mean, as a kid, it could be sometimes, I guess, difficult to find that support, right? Because you have less of a will or a reason to really use, but you still have the ability. It's just I think the child is a bit more dependent on the environment, you know, what parents, what people they're around. Whereas as an adult might be able to confront their fears more, but it's more years that they have to confront. And that could be also more difficult. So I don't know which one is easier to confront, but I don't know what you would have to say about that. Are there techniques that they can use at these different ages?
So actually, there's a lot of different way to deal with it. I cannot remember the name of the gentleman who went talking to Mark Passo one day, and he's been into these deep pain and suffering in this younger age, and he was talking about hypnosis. Hypnosis can be a good way to open those drawers, but you have to be ready. You have to care about it. You have to have the desire to do it, because the shadow work will not like treating you like a children. It will not pet you, and like it's gonna be a bitch slap. Okay, so hypnosis for me as I tried it once, and it's very good. It's very good because when you have experience in meditation and things like that, you can still have the control of it, and you cannot take open willing decisions into your process. It's not like a deeper hypnosis when you see these people they do whatever they want with them. It's not about that. It's more a lighter consensual hypnosis. So this is one part there. And then this one there, I don't know if people would be interested in that, but it's a fantastic and a cheap way to it. It's a shortcut. Mostly this is how I call them, but entheogenic compounds like mushrooms, okay, microdosing and things like that. They are a good way to, like a trampoline, it's like a jump start when you, because principally psilocybin will bring you back inside, and that's what we want there. We want deep introspection and healing. So if you have, and I want to tell people, mushrooms, when you take them, you have to be in the mood for it. It's a process. It's a respect for a plant. This mushroom, it deserves respect, because if you take it and you're messing with it, you're not gonna like this, okay? Because this is the kind of things that it opens doors into your mind. You know, you have the choice to take it or not, you know. And I could talk a little bit about my experience with entheogenic compounds, but yeah. Essentially there's the mushroom and psychotropic drugs that can be took for, but you know, you have to respect the way it's not a entertaining kind of drug. You know, you take it because there's a path, you know, there's a you're going this way, you know? So, well, usually social environments helps a lot. If you have good friends that you can talk to, if like me, I'm blessed with having a beautiful wife that is supporting me in that, there's nothing like that. There's nothing like friends and love and compassion to help you through your hardship. And it's my wife just remembered me a couple of days ago. I was having this day. There's those downs when you're going shadow work. There's downs and ups, and I wasn't this down. And my wife told me, "You can tell me about it, you know." Mm-hmm. So you have someone to like care about you helps a lot. Okay, yeah. like everybody, you need the social aspect in your life. It mm-hmm. helps a lot. You know, it's not like I'm all alone, you know, in a little apartment, and I have to like take care of myself by my home, but it's not the case for me. So I have so much thing that I'm grateful for, you know, mm-hmm. my children and my wife and the house that I rent, that I've been lucky to have all these beautiful things in my life. And I'm telling you people, I'm blessed, you know. But it's not, you work for this, you know, you work for it. The shadow work, the great work, it's all worth all the pain, all the sweating, all the crying and the laughing, because it's all that together, mm-hmm. you know. And another aspect of shadow working is taking inside of yourself knowledge. Because without this knowledge, without internet, let's say, okay, because internet has been a big like change in my life, when I've been able to get to the information, you know, it has been a very intimate and personal thing. I never really starting to talk about it like for years before going, because I wanted to bring understanding and wisdom about it, and not just like, because it's really, really a hardship. And being able to talk about it like that, and being able to talk about my traumas, because it's liberating you, by the way, when you're expressing it. That's why I told like, if you have really caring people around you, this will help you a lot.
Yeah, so let's say somebody doesn't have that support structure and doesn't have that social framework. Would you say that maybe starting to tell other people about their traumas could help, making other people aware of it, sharing that with others, essentially, to get to that point?
It's pretty much the same thing, actually. For me personally, I'm greeting people. Okay, I'm attracting these people. Okay, I like that in my life. I'm attracting the people who have problematic, you know. And what it is, when you're alone, you're not alone. You're never alone, because we're all connected together. That's one of the deception people need to get over. Because there's plenty of people who are outside in the social medias. They're having a homepage, and you don't need money to do it. There's plenty of blogs and vlogs about it. Like, if you're alone, when you're alone, you think you're alone, you're not alone, because there's a lot of people who can partake in their work too. So in shadow work, you're still alone. You know, it's not about the people you have around you or the quality of life. It's about you. It's a selfish fundamental need You know, it's very selfish because it's all you do it all for you first. Mm. Everything comes, every of your actions and what you do is coming, it is because it brings you something back. Okay, so shadow work is very like, it's very intimate. So you don't need a lot of people around you. You can find groups on the internet. You can, there's still, if you have friends, you know, you can talk to them. If you have relative and things like that. But mostly you go on the shadow work page there, and there's a lot of people who are who wants to have people like just like me, you know.
Yeah.
And people can listen to you. You know, every tools are there. It's just do you have the will to go through it? You know, do you have the care to do it?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is a process, right? That is a work. And it gives you worth out of the work, like any profession.
Yes.
But this is a real work to be done because it's on yourself. I mean, what more important work is there to be done? It's, you know, fixing you. And then that ultimately from fixing ourselves contributes to fixing our world, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It's directly connected together.
Hmm.
I don't see a free world without people doing it. I don't see it because when I was talking about 6 to 7 years old, it's scary. It's very terrifying when you realize the power of words, the power of propaganda, and the power of repetition, because this is all about that. And when you convince people, oh, truth is too hard, life is up, just let it go, live your life, go to party every day and things like that, and they will not push you. The society, the institution, the education institution will never bring you back inside in your temple, never. This is absolutely the contrary that what they want to do with people. They're really collectivist mindset, and it's very dangerous when you have a lot of people who don't do the great work, who don't do the shadow work. It's very dangerous because it can be turned as a weapon. There's no bad or good knowledge. It's what you do with it.
Mm.
It's the desire behind.
Yeah, there's a difference between knowledge and belief, right?
Yes, exactly. And this is what I'm telling to people.
Mm.
I don't believe anything. I know things, and when I don't know, I'm studying.
Right.
I'm getting in the work, you know, because
you're building a connection
outside of my family life. It's like it's taking most of the time of my life. Like you probably know, children are very demanding, very dependent, and it's a beautiful responsibility. I respect them. This is another point. If you don't respect yourself, if you don't love yourself, how can you love or respect someone else? You know, that's a big point there. Okay, and my children and my wife make me discover that you essentially rediscover your children inside. I got back to all these steps, you know, when they're crawling and then on the four paw and the four and when they start to talk and ask you questions and things like that, and I decided to impregnate myself with it, you know, and do the same as they do, and it's very empowering, really, because you're not the conditioning is gone. Okay, it's everything is objective, principally, you know.
So you mentioned hypnosis as a use. You mentioned mushrooms.
Yes.
And then here you just mentioned sort of questions and using questions as sort of a guide, and other than having support through other people. Is there any other techniques you would say are really essential for people to know?
not that I know personally, okay? Mm. Because these ones there, if you care to do your work, this is what you're gonna do, because essentially you're not that's an obligation to do the mushrooms and psilocybin, okay? It's
there are more.
Yeah, this is an option that I call them the shortcut for a reason, because this shit will knock hard, you know. I don't think there's a way to do the shadow work, because it's all a really personal and intimate relation and a path that you have to take, and you're on your own. Okay, maybe you're gonna have to go see friends and entertaining and things like that, because it's, you need some to take a break from time to time and heal from this, because it's like you're taking your wounds and you're reopening it, you know, and so you have to heal again.
Yeah,
there's a I think there's a growing amount of people, you know, especially in the entheogenic community. Because I don't always see it as a shortcut. I see it as a fast track, to seeing, you know, what where your shadow is. And there's a lot of people who forget that it's shadow work for a reason. It's not shadow play. It's not shadow, a little bit of shadow, and you go tell your friends, and then you see a little bit. But there's an amount of work that you have to be doing. And something like entheogens, if you're not doing the work, the mushrooms know, or these entheogens, there's an intelligence that knows if you're doing the work. And if you keep dabbling in those and you're not doing the work, it's going to chew you up and spit you back out. Yep. And I was just listening to Manly Hall earlier, and he was talking about vigil and vigilance and being able to be quiet and let the divine within speak. And you know, he said that there's an amount of worthiness that you have to have. If you're not, it's like there's a lot of people in the community that think that, oh, you're just, you know, and I guess it is kind of there's polarity, or there's you know, opposites to it, because there, especially in the Christian tradition, we're taught that everyone is worthy. But there is an aspect that the divine will not speak to you if you're not worthy to be spoken to. And he said something as far as, you, there's worldliness and there's worthiness, and worthiness requires you to put in that work. It's a lifelong obligation to quiet yourself and limit the you know, a lot of people, like you said, they have the intelligence of, or the IQ of, a 7 or 8 year old, and this is what I see it as. Their emotions aren't disciplined. There's no work into taming these attitudes and thoughts and emotions. You know, so they don't have the quietude of the mind, or they're the vigilance of being a silent observer, without attributing all these attitudes or thoughts to that. Do you have any, have you done any practices with, you know, quieting these mental or emotional attitudes?
Sure. Well, I began my path into meditation and contemplation. Well, real contemplation, because you know, most children are contemplating, and people tell them they're sick. Okay, that they need to take pills because of that. So contemplation for me has been a big thing. I use nature as a basic fundamental principle. So when I want to have the calm, and I want to have, I don't know how to describe. I don't know if you guys have this relation with nature.
I do.
So it's really, really, there's a lot of healing when you're going there. Your stress is getting out, you know, and then this is a very, very beautiful and poetic symbiosis between you and nature. And I think this is one of the most important thing. And yes, silence it's dealt in the meditation, has been dealt with the meditation for me. Okay, so you have, this is what you're calling psychic noises. Okay, there are images and sounds and lights and things like that that are coming back. And when you're in the process of shadow working, you're, there's a part of you called a superego who will, it will bash you. It will tell you things that you don't want to hear. It's going to insult you. It's going to attack you more, because this is the part of yourself. It's your mask, basically. It's your societal mask. And when the people, they're talking about controlling the ego, it's not the ego that we have basically when you born with it and you discover it when you grow up. It's the instinctual relation you have. But superego is your conditioning and your programming from your parents, for your relative, the educational institutions and things like that. So this thing there, if it's not tamed, it will tame you. You know, you're gonna get back to your old habits. You're gonna act like infantilizing. You're gonna be an infant. You're gonna be afraid of everything. You know. That's why we have authoritarianism, because people, when they are 6 or 7 years old, all they want is validation from their masters or parents or caretakers. Okay, so people want to have validation from the outside. Shadow work is having validation from the inside, basically. Sometimes you're getting, and there's not only negative aspect to it, because I want to, can I talk about this a little
bit?
Yes. The good sides of it.
Absolutely.
Okay, so shadow work, even if it's hard, even if it's hardship, there's a lot of beautiful thing that spawns from it. Okay, I have complete control over my emotions. I can switch off and on my emotion when I need to. And that's there. It's priceless. When you're in situation that you need to be impartial, you know, you need to be calm, and you have to act like a real responsible adult. You cannot take decision based on emotions. So that's one thing there. This is really important to have control. Mm. So the one thing that helps you when you're getting to it took me years to achieve that. It's stoicism.
Yes.
So you basically live under principles. It is a rigid system, very rigid, but it's very efficient. You don't have to take everything that come with it, you know, because there's a history of stoicism and the philosophy of it. Me, it has come naturally. Mm-hmm. So this is one of the aspects there. And then self-learning is gone. This is where this is where you're starting to say no when you have to, basically.
Yeah.
So this there, just that to achieve that, it takes me a decade to achieve it. I'm just starting to control. And one aspect that I want to bring that it's so important, it's intuition. When you have this, the balance, the equilibrium between the two aspects, the two part of your brains, you have the middle pillar, like Brendan Martin said to yesterday in James podcast. And this is a good point there. And because you have the path of severity and you have the other, there's the one in the middle. So shadow work brings you there. it's up to you if you continue or if you stop. But mostly people, most people who are doing the shadow work are going all the way. It takes eons to get through this mess that we're in, you know, because you realize that you are it. There's no separation. You are this. You are a reflection. As above, so below. So below. As above, so below. Yeah, the correspondence. Mm-hmm. Whether you like it or not, you influenced by the society and the culture and everything, and it's taking back the power.
Right. Yeah. So you mentioned Stoicism. I think that's a really, really good concept that I haven't talked much about, but is one that is very powerful for a lot of people, and it's on the uprise in nowadays. Yes. As a philosophy. And a lot of people just first swept it under the rug, but it came back pretty naturally with all the great writers and all the great authors and at the time that were promoting this so-called philosophy. But basically, it's exactly what you said, living in harmony with nature, you know, understanding what nature is. And for me, I have that experience where I have contemplation. I remember I was friends with this guy who was a psychologist teacher. And I was like best friends with him, and he studied my mind, and he's like, what you're doing is not meditation, it's contemplation. And, you know, because I told him I would sit there and I would listen to music, or I would just quiet my mind and I would think. And music to me was another way that helped me collect my thoughts and rearrange them. And to me, that was like recreating my culture, because if a culture is making you think a certain thing and trying to infiltrate your mind, well, if you find music that is different from the mainstream, that you perhaps really like, that is creative and spiritual, that might create a whole new impact on the way you think. At least that's what did, in my view, I think really helped me on my way, is discovering all the many artists that barely anybody knows just from my research on music. And so not only that, but silence. Like when I'm in nature, I don't need music. You know, like, why do I need music in nature? And that's when I don't use music. I just listen to, you know, the trees or whatever. And people think, oh, it doesn't do anything for you. Oh, nature is overrated. I heard this from some people who I've talked to, because, you know, my message is nature is the answer. And I'm like, you're really going to tell me that? You know, it tells me about an individual, because most people have a deep connection. They, you know, it's like peace, serenity, immediately, you know, vacation. And it's no surprise to me. So I thank you for sharing that, because I have an experience with that too. I absolutely do. And, you know, different times of the day, even midnight, it's beautiful. It's beautiful at all times of the day, frankly. And it could also teach you a lot of lessons too. It's not like always beautiful. You know, there's some chaos within the jungle, within the, you know, different areas, but we as humans, we've created houses and created the ability to live in harmony with nature if we so choose. Yes. And so that's what my whole second book is about. And I mentioned Stoicism in there. But again, it's like you, I ran into it by surprise. So do you have any like book recommendations or any particular resources? I know you mentioned a podcast. Is there any other particular resources you would recommend for people?
If you can get into Michael Tesarian's body of knowledge about psychology, about narcissism and psychopathy and psychopathology as such. The way I see things is, if you want to get out of mind control, you have to know about it. And I'm not talking about getting out of society. I'm not telling you to cut yourself from everybody. But it's a hermit. You have all these things around you, all these beautiful things, but essentially it's about your inner temple. You have this beautiful world inside of you, this infinite possibility of what you want to do. And music is one good one for, if you want to express your emotions, if you want to create and put yourself in nature by words, by music, because they are extension of ourselves. So that's a good way to put it. And I suggest people to get into the Kybalion. This is my basis there. The natural law, that's why I'm so, I'm not considering myself an hermeticist, but I'm deep into that, you know, because I acquire understanding of it. And I've been able to align myself with it.
Right. You don't have to consider yourself anything, you know what I mean? You can study many different philosophies.
I don't like to be categorized, you know?
Right.
I don't like clubs at all. I want to stay out, and this is why the Libercast exists. Because there's so much divide outside. There's so much divide inside that we need to reconcile all of that
together. Yeah. And, you know, in particular, I use the word abolitionism. I know, you know, we talked about this before. I don't like to label myself either. For the longest time, I've always had, like, on my bios, like, no title. I would just write Corey Angelot, no title. And it's because it's like, I don't want to be part of this identity and make myself out to be this sort of egoic image. The reason why abolitionism kind of fit with me was because of the action that I was partaking in. And the fact that it was used in the past for the same action. And they all had different professions, and they all had different things that they were doing. And they all didn't categorize themselves under different ideologies. They were just partaking in a certain action. So to me, you know, that is special on behalf of, like, trying to get some sort of unity, you know, where it needs to be found for what we're trying to do. Because I think categorization helps for that purpose. It's like putting a music in a genre. It's like, oh, I really like this genre. And now I could discover more music that way. But if you didn't put it in a genre, you wouldn't be able to discover more music. So, you know, that's how I discovered more music. And I think it can be sometimes harmful. I don't know what you think about this, but if an individual has really sad thoughts and they play a sad song, it might just make it worse, or it might make them feel better. But I'm not sure, you know, it could make them succumb in their current state. What I've noticed from my experience, you know, where they douse themselves with tons of sad music, and it becomes part of their identity.
I'm going to be honest with you guys. I'm a metal head. Okay. So happy music doesn't fit with me. Okay. I listen to like very heavy stuff. There's a lot of, poems in music, and we have this band called here Gris, that is a very doom-like black metal, depressive stuff. But it can, when you do the shadow work, you know, you have to deal with these things. And it's not that you cannot let this thing, because emotions are like a flow. They're coming, you're feeling it, and then you're letting go. So I'm a metalhead. I'm listening to dark shit, you know. I listen to nihilism, you know, that all these stuff that people, it's useless, you're all idiots and things like that. You know what? But I don't care.
Right.
Because the music connects with me. I'm a big fan of classical style music, and metal, it's very good, very cathartic. Style of music, you know, when you're going into a metal show, you're gonna feel all kinds of things there, because people are connecting together for this, and it's very powerful. And music does that. It joins people together. And metal there, it's fantastic. You know, I stumbled upon this band called Bloodywood. I don't know if you're aware of it. Bloodywood is a folk metal from India. And it's very empowering. The lyrics are empowering, and they're talking about real things, depression, bullying, and sexual aggression, all things that connect with reality. And they're spiritual. For me, it's spiritual. I listen to this band, and I got these shivers. The my hair are like that high, and I'm connecting to music literally, and that's a very good point there. And yes, it can be a good salvation for people who don't like, I don't know about you, but I'm not into salvationism at all. I despise it. I'm a fighter. I'm not gonna submit to anything, you know. So if I don't like it, I'm not living with it. I'm getting rid of, you know, like people. Like, yeah, the same thing. People, and you have these bad habits you have, because I have bad habits still. You get rid of it. When it's destructive, you know, you get rid of it.
Yeah, and I mean, I'd say that's also like a lesson in nature. Like, the things are going to happen, you know, and you have to be ready for it. You have to be prepared. Yes. You need to have the mindset, the courage, the strength. And that is sort of what I see in the mindset that you're sort of presenting to me. But so kind of the point, what I was kind of saying is, like, you know, music can be used in good or bad, like a tool, like anything. Yes. But like in your case, I definitely would see it as good, because, you know, you're finding out artists that some people may not know, you know, that are independent, who that are speaking the truth. And I think that makes a big difference, does it not? Yes. Like, there's music that is put in certain frequencies, like 440 hertz versus 432. And people are finding out there's connections in what the music is actually doing to people. And if that's the case, then, well, you know, not all music is so equal. You know, we got to be very careful, I think, with sometimes what choices we make with music, not just with food, with people and other things.
Mostly because people are really have a very short vision and perception about music. Yeah. Like, if I'm listening to Satanist music, okay, I like black metal, and there's a band called Gargaroth. These people are awesome. Okay, the music that they play, it sounds like classical. There's a beautiful poesy behind. It's beautiful. It's beautiful music, but he, depends on what ears to listen to it, because my wife cannot stand this shit.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah, and I think it depends, right, like you said, on where an individual is within their life, and there's nothing wrong with that.
I think this really says a lot about shadow work, because I see a lot in the New Age community is that they put the shadow into a obviously the shadow in you know, it leans towards a negative perception, but the shadow exists within every human for a reason, and it creates a polarity that's there for a reason.
Yeah.
And you know, something like acknowledging the enjoyment out of something like doom metal or heavy. I'm my guilty pleasure is just like, I mean, obviously I love metal. I grew up on, you know, rock and roll and all that stuff, but gangster rap, like, I don't give a fuck gangster rap. Like, that is just, you know, I listened to it at a young age, and it's an amount of freedom. And when you let it be that, and you let yourself experience that, it's a part of you that, you know, it might be lean towards the shadow, but there's a freedom in the shadow. You know, it's like the where free will runs amok, but it's still that free will. It's still like you're not a robot. You have you know, both of these aspects of yourself, you know. And you know, I see a lot of people attributing the shadow to something scary and always dark, but the shadow is there for a reason. And I just see a relationship between this. Like, I don't know if you've ever listened to Mark's older stuff with his group In Satanity. And I was listening to it, and I was like, this is sick. Like, this is just the sickest shit. Like, I loved it. And I listened to that. But I mean, you know, I think there's a letting go when you let yourself listen to that, and then there's when you go deep into that, and then there's a polarity. It reveals something different about the other end of that. You know, the beauty, and you know, it allows you to see deeper into the beauty and the love of things. You know what I mean? I'm not sure if that makes sense for you. What do you think about that?
The thing is, when you're into this kind of music, even rap and things like it can get very dark. You know, there's a lot of dark stuff there. I think it's transmutation thing. Okay, I made peace with this part of myself because I was a Satanist too. Okay, before, so I made peace with myself, with this part. I don't want to get rid of it. You know, I tamed it. I decided you don't have control over me. You're still useful. I'm gonna keep you because there's a good part that Mark Basso brings. Having the psychopath there, you have to have it. Okay, yeah. If not, you're not gonna survive in this world. Okay, you have to be able to switch, and that's what I was talking earlier. You know, when there's situation and there's context that needs to be brought. I'm not saying that metal will make you psychopath. It doesn't. It's not that. In my case, because I can always talk for myself. I can only just talking for myself. It's more of a frequency thing.
Yeah.
So I'm a highly intuitive person. Okay, I see through people. Okay, I'm like that because of shadow work. This is what it brought me. You know, intuition. So I can really be empathic with someone. I can put myself at his place and having a relation. I can see if this person one time and then never see him again, but I'm gonna grow up from it. And because once again, natural law, correspondence, you know, people say, oh, negative people and toxic people. Sure, you have the choice to put them out of your life, but you have the choice to listen to them and observe them and then talk to them, and then later you let them go, you know, because you this is a frequency vibrational relation with people. You are expressing vibration and then there's an exchange from the people. But if you are able to put a barrier between the two, and that's what empathic conversation and communication is all about. It's I'm able to understand you, but I'm not letting you inside. That's one of the big thing there. And we have this expression. We have a great example on that is if you go on Facebook. Facebook is the dumpster fire of all social medias, really.
Yeah.
People, there's no barrier there. They're behind their screens, behind their cell phone, and they're telling garbage to other people. They're insulting them. And this is projection. Projection is everything. When you have a relation with someone and this people treat you like shit because they are treating themselves like that, you know? And it's not true that if I'm angry against you, if I'm frustrated against you, is because I have a problem. It's garbage. It's garbage. Yeah. This is a new age deception. That you're gonna get pounded. And can I add something? I made a video about that on the Libercast Facebook page. I stumbled upon these shadow workers. Okay, this guy is pretending that he's doing shadow work. Okay, I went to the Zoom meeting, and then the guy started to push collectivism. Oh, you want to use shadow work, and then we're gonna all be together to do it. No, it doesn't work that way.
It has to be individualized, like an individual with an individual, if anything.
It must. It's not. I'm not talking about having support. That's what we were talking earlier.
Right.
When you need to approach someone and have a conversation, like deep conversation with them. I'm not talking about that. They were like pushing the pajama party of shadow working. Okay. Everyone coming with their baggage and then talking their like emptying their bags, and you know, you're gonna hear a lot of like
no confrontation.
And I'm the confronting guy. I'm the party pooper. Okay. I'm gonna go somewhere and on groups and posts and things like that. And I'm gonna take a shit. If it doesn't make any sense, I'm gonna take a shit on it. And right. People just need to do that.
I agree.
Okay. When people are saying nonsense, you have to say them that it's nonsense. Even if they, oh no, you don't understand me, or I'm gonna block you or something like that. You know, this guy who was doing his meeting, what I tell him, you're a fraud, man. You're a liar. I told him, because this is what we have to do. If when you're in the great work and you know objective morality, you're gonna detect it very fast. Moral relativism is everywhere, because yeah. People have this same mentality for themselves.
So, you know, you mentioned like people kind of spilling their baggage, throwing it out there. I think that's on social media too. You know, people write up all these long things and throw it out there, yes. But they're not taking the time to sit there and confront themselves like a journal would.
Validation.
Because like I have a journal, right? And it doesn't go to anybody but myself. So what's the point of me writing it for myself? I don't put it out for ego, for identity, for image, for validation, for attention. No. You know, if I want somebody to know about something, I'll tell them in person, maybe, if I can. Or I'll get a one-on-one conversation. But like you're saying, if you're getting a group of people together, what's going to come of that other than dependence of that group? Of just, oh, I'm ready to spill the beans like I do on social media, like I do on the phone, like I do. But you're not confronting your internal fears.
Yes, it's like it's going to be a social jerking circle. This is what's going to be. And
good point.
I usually, when I'm talking about a social shadow work, I bring it from a very personal way. I say I, not you. And this is how people. It's the most easy way to get people to learn to listen to you. It's you talking. I did that. It has these consequences in my life. There's the good stuff. There's the bad stuff. But you're bringing them the experience. If you're coming with a book and you tell them that's the fucking truth, they will not listen to you. Hmm. It's like it's a very childish behavior. When you have to deal with children, you act like you're talking to children. You have to be straight to the point, no babbling. You know, I get very bored when I'm listening to people talking, because I'm not about all this cultural stuff. I reside in Quebec, okay, so it's French mostly, but I'm not into the culture at all. I in the shadow work, this is where it got me. I'm still living in it because I have. A little job that I'm working, and I have my social life there. I have my friends and my family, but I'm a very introvert person. I can be with people and still be alone, you know?
So this is a great conversation. I appreciate having you. If you don't mind, I'll ask one last question. So, and of course, you can take this any direction you want. You can connect it to shadow work. This is a question I like to ask a lot of people, and connecting it to what you just said about yourself and mentioning your own personal experience, which I agree, like, will help people connect with you. And like, it's even proven in different studies that, you know, if you have your name on different channels online, people are more attracted to it because it's an individual rather than some brand or some channel or whatever. So having that personal relationship, I agree, is really important. So you and I and other people have come across this thing called statism, and this is the belief in authority, belief that in collectivism, essentially, that we need, you know, somebody else to help fix our traumas, essentially, that we have to be dependent on them for fixing our traumas or our rights, our ownership. And so how long were you a statist, and how did you get out of that? Was it through Michael Tesserian, through the things that you mentioned?
Yes. I never voted. I'm an abolitionist since my teenage years. I've been always considering myself an anarchist, because I've seen very soon in my life the illegitimacy and the violence and the coercion behind. I didn't understand the way I do now, for sure, but I was still seeing the crimes and the evil behind it. Statism as such has many faces. Okay, so shadow work counters that. Eventually, you're gonna get out of the patterns. You're gonna get out, you're gonna take a step back from the culture. Because essentially, it's the temple that is important. It's your own temple. You're gonna get distracted. You're gonna take, you're gonna make decisions that are gonna change your life as like children. It may be it's gonna be maybe slow you down a little bit, but it's not running. We're not running. It's healing, and we have to be strong enough to have to stand with a statist, stand with a religionist, and having a conversation human to human. And you have to have this conversation with yourself. Are you able to look at yourself in the mirror and having a conversation and tell yourself that you love yourself? Not a narcissist way of telling it. Put your hand in your heart, in over your heart, and tell yourself that you love yourself. I'm telling you, it's incredible, very empowering. And this compassion, we need to have it with people around us. Whatever the belief they have, whatever, we still, sure, there's a lot of evil people that you don't want to have, for sure. You keep the toxic people out of your life. But like I was saying, it's a symbiosis, you know? It's the apophatic approach to life. You know, you listen to people, they will tell you things, their experience that are bad, that have made bad decision, and then you're not doing it. You don't have to take all the bad stuff. You don't have to take the anger when people are talking to you and they're angry, not necessarily onto you, but they're angry or frustrated or sad. You know, it is a beautiful relation we have to have with ourselves for having to have a beautiful, beautiful relation with the outer world, because it's still there. You're gonna have to confront it again and again and again, and life will test you. If you don't do the great work, the great work will slap you around. You know, it's natural law, the consequentialism, cause and effect. You don't do nothing, you're gonna get shit from it. You know, just like that.
So would you say, like, we're naturally free and it's just a matter of that embrace, and the more we keep ourselves away from that freedom, the more it just slaps us in the face?
And yes, until if you go against yourself, prepare to have a hard ride. I'm telling you, because it's not government, daddy or mommy government that will bring you to this. They will probably cause you to have a spiritual awakening, you know, in starting the spiritual path, but they're not the solution. You know, the solution are inside. If you have problems, if you have great grief or sadness or depression, you have to make peace with yourself, because you're not going to get over it. And it's not taking pills that would get you over it, for sure. Right. For sure. You have to have the will and the care to get through it. No, I have bruised and bleeding a little bit. I'm speaking metaphorically here, but you're gonna get bruised a lot. You know? Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for joining us and sharing all this knowledge. It's been very great. We haven't had anybody go deep into this part of shadow work, which is so essential. Yes. Of evaluating yourself. So thank you for sharing that. I like talking about music and nature. You know, these things fit my alley. I think it fits a lot of people's alleys on purpose because it's reflective. You know, it's interesting how Aaron listens to rap, you listen to metal, and I listen to, like, Aaron would look at my music and he'd be like, this is, like, too peaceful. This is too, like, soft. But, like, I listen to all sorts of different things, and I think it does depend on the mood, and I do think it depends on the reflective nature of things, because, you know, sometimes I listen to trip-hop, and I didn't realize how dark it is, and it's old roots of 90s, it's, like, really dark music, but I like it, you know, like, the old-fashioned rock of the 90s was also really dark, you know, so, in the 80s were upbeat, you know, the 2000s were, like, kind of fun, but, like, you had different environments, and some of that comes back with individuals. So I appreciate you for sharing all of that. I think people can kind of relate to a lot of that, and I hope they look into your work. You're called, you have a channel called The Libercast, right?
Yes.
The Libercast. They can just look up The Libercast on...
Yes, it's on Facebook, YouTube, Rumble, Odyssey. I decided to put them there for backup. Yes, there's a lot of subject that are covered there, not only shadow work, but mostly it's about mind control and healing and exposing the truth, mostly.
Great. Yeah, I recommend everybody check that out. That's Libercast, and your name is Fred Gingras, right?
C'est Gingras.
Oh, God. I'm not
going to say that. Yes, French name. It's a French name. It's okay, man. No problem.
Yeah, but if anybody wants to check out any more speakers, such as yourself, and thank you very much for coming on, go to nita.one/summit, nita.one/summit. This is the end of Slavery Summit. Thank you very much for watching. Take care, everybody.